business a long time, Kenny, and I learned to trust my gut. My gut told me to get off that damn plane. Now, stop complaining. You're starting to aggravate me.
No offense, Pop, but there's a first time for everything, Kenny said, pouting like a little bitch. Maybe that feeling in your gut was a stomachache.
Oh, really? I replied. Curtis, show your brother that text message. Curtis shook his head, handing my phone to his brother. Kenny read it and became unusually silent. The message was from Jamaica John, telling us that the pilot had been arrested and the plane was confiscated by the DEA.
Hmm. Cat got his tongue now, huh?
Mama shouted to me. He need to start listening to his father. You ain't a stupid man, and he should know that, or else you should put your foot in his ass.
I think you owe Dad an apology, Kenny, Curtis snapped.
Kenny hesitated for a minute, then grudgingly said, Sorry, Dad. I don't know why we gotta keep bumping heads, Kenny. You're my son, and I love you, but you have to stop second-guessing me.
I know, but what, Kenny?
Curtis sounded a little agitated himself.
If we listened to you, we'd all be in jail right now, sharing jelly sandwiches with that damn bush pilot.
There you go. Tell him about yourself, Curtis, Mama shouted. Turn off here at this exit, I instructed Curtis. A few minutes later, we passed a sign that announced we'd just entered Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Go in there where it says Sage Diner. Curtis pulled into the parking lot, and we all got out. Mama, we'll be right back. Kenny, grab one of those bricks and put it in the bag. The parking lot was fairly empty. Somehow, we had managed to miss the lunch crowd and beat the dinner one, so the timing was perfect. We walked inside, and sure enough, the only diners were a small group of older men sitting in a corner near the rear of the diner.
Can I help you?
A heavyset guy in his 50s asked.
Yeah, I'm looking for Joey the Wop, I told him.
You mean Joey? The guy asked again.
I take offense to the name Wop.
I gave a nod.
Yeah, whatever.
I looked past the first guy to see Joey sitting at the end of a table in back. Joey was Italian and well into his late 50s, but he still didn't look a day over 35. His wavy hair was slicked back, and in typical Joey fashion, his white shirt was unbuttoned to show off the gold chains he wore.
Come on, boys.
I walked past the guy and headed for Joey.
Larry Duncan.
Joey smiled when he looked up and saw me approaching the table.
The last time I saw you, we were in a holding cell. I went to prison. And I went to the fucking crazy house.
I finished the sentence for him.
I'm gonna make your day, Joey. I got something really special for you.
Oh, yeah?
What you got for me?
Joey asked.
It's a gift.
I had to hold back a laugh because most of the time, this was when I would pull out my gun and shoot the poor bastard. Instead, I turned to Kenny and said, Give him the bag. Kenny handed him the bag, and Joey looked inside to see the key of heroin it held. He handed it to one of his men and said, Take this in the back and test it. The man got up and disappeared through the kitchen door.
So, Larry, you do know there's a substantial price on your head, right?
Joey asked as we waited.
So I've been told.
You planning on collecting? He had no idea I had a hand grenade in my pocket and would have no problem pulling the trigger.
I guess that depends on how good that dope you just gave us is.
I'm a long-term thinker. Plus, I hate that bastard LC for killing my Uncle Sal and Cousin Tony. He sat back in his seat, and no one at the table said much until his man returned and whispered something in his ear. Joey smiled like a kid on Christmas.
So, that brick you gave me, that's a gift?
How much is LC selling these to you for? I asked.
45 a brick.
I let out a long whistle, looking at him pitifully.
Wow, that's expensive.
Really? I thought that was pretty fair, actually. How much you selling yours for?
Tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna let you have this one for free, and when you need more, I'm gonna let you get it for 30.
What?
Joey's eyes widened in surprise, and everyone at the table started shifting in their seats like they were trying to contain their excitement. I now had their full attention. Once he had a minute to get himself under control again, Joey must have thought things through a little more, because all of a sudden, he looked at me suspiciously.
Hold on. This shit right here is pure. We could step on it 3-4 times and nobody would know the difference. What's the catch?
No catch, I said calmly. I'm just setting the new price for the market.
Tell your friends.
I'll be in touch in 48 hours. I turned to walk out.
Larry, wait. I got a question for you. How much of this shit you got?
Joey asked. I turned back around to face him.
More than you can sell.
Spread the word, Joey. Larry Duncan is back in business.
I tossed him the hand grenade with the pin still intact. He and his buddies looked like they were about to shit themselves as I walked out of the diner with Curtis and Kenny.
Why would you sell it to him so cheap? We easily could have gotten 35, 40, Kenny said.
Now, here you go questioning what I'm doing again. This boy and his damn questions.
Listen, what's our objective in this whole thing?
To put Elsie out of business and take back what is ours,
Kenny replied.
Exactly. And the best way to put your competition out of business is to undercut their prices. Just look at what Amazon and Walmart are doing to the mom-and-pop shops.
Well, we are about to become the Walmart of dope. You got it?
Yeah, actually, I think I do, he replied. So why didn't Vinny do this?
Because Vinny is an idiot, just like his daddy. A guy like that could never beat LC. You can't beat someone you're afraid of. That's why LC can't beat me, I told them, easing back into my seat.
Mama reached out and patted my shoulder, giving me her approval.
All right, then. Enough of the chit-chat. Let's get going. We've got quite a few more stops to make, boys, I announced, and we were on our way again. Everything was falling into place, and I was feeling great about my plans.
London, 36. You've got to be kidding me, I said, feeling totally exasperated after fidgeting with the raggedy door of the so-called motel we had just checked into and finally getting it to open. I walked into the small room, stopping just beyond the doorway and dropping my bag. What's wrong? Daryl's voice came over my shoulder. This place looks like it has bed bugs. I felt like my skin was crawling.
Well, it's the only room they had available, and we said we wanted it. If you want, you can check into the Sheraton and I'll stay here. No need for you to suffer. He was serious, and I'm sure he was trying to be nice, but I wasn't going nowhere, especially by myself.
What, and have you talk about how bougie I am to Vegas for the next year? I retorted, shaking my head. I don't think so.
Okay, suit yourself.
He pointed at the lumpy bed.
So what are we going to do about sleeping arrangements? There's only one bed.
You're going to have to deal with sleeping on the floor, I answered without hesitation. My cell phone rang, saving me from having to hear him respond. Hello?
London, damn it! You need to get your ass on the next flight and come home. This shit is getting out of control, and nobody seems to care about your safety but me.
Hello to you too, Harris, I snapped. Daryl glanced at me briefly, then put his bag on the bed and pretended to search for something. I walked over to the small window to have a little more privacy. The last thing I wanted him to hear was my overly emotional husband's tirade through the phone.
I'm not kidding, London. Rio brought his ass home, and you should have been with him. What the fuck are you thinking?
Harris ranted. I know he flew home. He was trailing Uncle Larry, who, by the way, we had no clue was even here until we saw him meeting with Vinny Dash. We had to split up, I tried to explain.
So instead of following your uncle back to the U.S., where you knew you would be safe, you sent your brother and decided to stay in Jamaica to keep tabs on a ruthless drug lord by yourself, What kind of sense does that make?
First of all, when we split up, we didn't know where Larry was headed. Rio found out he was flying back to Farmingdale after he took off.
Well, let me give you a little update, London. He didn't fly back to Farmingdale. We don't know where the fuck he or his kids are right now, Harris stated.
I frowned and turned toward Daryl. What do you mean he didn't fly back to Farmingdale?
Like I said, the plane landed and his ass wasn't on it. And before you ask, neither were Curtis or Kenny. For all we know, they could very well be back in Jamaica helping Vinny, which is why you need to get your ass back home.
Daryl's phone rang, and he answered. I heard him say, "What's up, Vegas?" before he stepped outside the room.
"Hello, London? Do you hear me talking to you?"
Harris asked. "I hear you, Harris, but I'm not coming home. Not yet, anyway. I'm sure my father and brothers are handling the situation with Larry. If I was in any danger, they would call and make sure I came home."
"Oh, so your husband calling and telling you to come home doesn't mean shit, huh?"
"I didn't say that." Daryl stepped back into the room. I searched his face for any signs of alarm, but saw none. I grabbed a shawl out of my bag and spread it on the bed before sitting down. "Now, listen. I'm not alone. I'm safe. And I'm gonna stay here until we find my nephew. Orlando and the rest of the family risked their lives to rescue Mariah when the Dashes kidnapped her. How can I do any less?" I told him. "I'll talk to you later." I ended the call and put Harris's number on Do Not Disturb. It was something a wife shouldn't have to do to her husband's number, but I didn't want to deal with hitting ignore when he tried calling and texting me multiple times later. For someone who barely paid me any attention when I was actually home, he sure as hell got his panties in a bunch when I wasn't there. Most times, I was the dutiful wife and ended up giving in whenever he threw one of his tantrums. But something about being away, being on a mission, had me feeling like I could get used to having more independence once in a while.
"You good?" Daryl asked.
"Yeah, I'm fine. What did Vegas say?" I asked.
"He confirmed what you already know. Your uncle and cousins weren't on the plane when it landed. They got folks looking for him now."
"And what did he say about us?"
"He said nothing's changed. Complete the job that we were here to do and let him know if we need backup since Rio is home. I told him we were good for now."
"Okay, cool." I relaxed a little. Daryl came over and sat beside me. We both remained quiet for a few moments until I said, "So, are we going to talk about the elephant in the room?" He laughed and looked around.
"What elephant?"
"I'm serious." I tried not to smile. "I'm talking about what happened last night in the grill." He turned toward me, leaning his face so close to mine that I could feel his body heat.
"What happened in the grill, London?"
"You know what happened," I said, biting my lip. I was breathing so hard that I could see the rise and fall of my chest with every breath I took. "You kissed me."
"You mean like this?"
He reached out and touched the side of my face in an effort to guide my mouth to his. But he didn't need to, because just being this close to him was an aphrodisiac. My desire to kiss him overwhelmed me, and it was my arms that pulled his head to mine. It was the kiss that I had been wanting for the past 24 hours. I savored the taste of his mouth, our tongues dancing as if they were partners in a choreographed routine it took years to master. I wanted more, and I knew that he did too. My hands pulled his shirt over his head, and my perfectly manicured fingers ran down his chiseled chest. I could feel the muscles of the six-pack he worked so hard to maintain. His body was nothing like the slim frame of my husband. Daryl's was cut, firm, and thick. It was a welcome change. His mouth eased its way to my neck, then my ears, giving me succulent kisses. The sound of his lips kissing my flesh was like some crazy sexual stimulant to my brain. I let out a moan, and he continued his kisses down to my chest. I held my breath in anticipation of his lips licking and sucking my extremely sensitive, hardened nipples. I exhaled when I felt the warm wetness of his tongue on one, then the other breast. I leaned back on the bed, pushing away thoughts about bedbugs or any other possible critters that might have been present, as Daryl slipped my lace panties down my hips so I could kick them off. I unfastened his jeans and slipped my hand into his boxers, where his aroused manhood was waiting. He stood up to take his pants off, and I sat up and smiled at him. With my fingers still wrapped around it, I welcomed his hardness into my mouth, taking him by surprise. I hadn't been very big on blowjobs when we were together, but I'd learned to love the power I wielded when I had a man's penis in my mouth. "Oh, shit," he groaned, turning me on even more. I licked him from the tip of his dick to the base of his balls, and when it was all said and done, I deep-throated him to the point where he could no longer stand and gently pushed my head away.
"Fuck. When did you learn to do that?"
"I've learned a few tricks over the years," I said with a self-confident smirk.
"Oh, yeah? Well, you're not the only one who's learned a few new tricks," he said, guiding me into position. "Now is my turn. Lay back."
I did exactly as he told me to do. Oral sex is not something you just let anyone do, because when it's bad, it's frustrating as hell. Oh, but then again, when it's good, it's like the 4th of July, Christmas, New Year's, and your birthday all combined into one. My husband wasn't very good at it, so we tended to stay away from it, but if my recollection of Daryl's abilities was still accurate, I was about to be sent to holiday heaven. He opened my legs, kissing down my inner thighs until I could feel his warm breath on my lips, which he licked until they were moist and glistening. I let out a loud, long moan when his tongue finally slid against my clit. He began to suck and lick it like he'd done to my nipples. Fuck. It had been years since I'd felt that type of pleasure, and I arched my back as an invitation for him to give me even more. It didn't take long for the pressure inside me to build up to a boiling point, and before I knew it, an even more intense wave of pleasure had taken over. I would have been happy with one, but quickly, one became two, and two became five. And to be honest, I stopped counting after five. Phew. At that point, he could just send me the bill. He continued until I begged him to stop. And that's when he flipped me over, mounting me from the back. He slipped his dick into me and grabbed a handful of hair in the process. Who the hell would have thought that would turn me on? But it did. It turned me on like a motherfucker. I clawed the sheets and called out his name as he fucked me harder and harder into a state of ecstasy. I'd always been a pleaser, so at that point, I began to concentrate on his release. But you have no idea how great it was when we both arrived at the height of pleasure and climaxed together. Exhausted and covered in sweat, he collapsed beside me. I closed my eyes, realizing what we had just done. It had been unexpected, but certainly not unappreciated. It had been just as much of an emotional release as a physical one for me and, I suspected, for him too. I felt his lips press against my shoulder, and he reached out and pulled my body into his. My back was pressed against his chest. The sun had now set, and the room was dark.
"You okay?"
he asked.
"Yeah, I'm fine," I replied.
He wrapped his arms around me, and our legs intertwined as we lay in the darkness. My mind was filled with a million thoughts, but no regrets. And I fell asleep to the sounds of his snoring beside me.
Chippy, 37. "Are you nervous?" I asked Nevada. He looked a little uncomfortable, and I wasn't sure if it was because of the shirt and tie he wore, or where we were headed. We were traveling in the back of a black SUV, being driven by Rodney, who also served as the head of my personal security. "A little," he said with a shrug, and a typical teenager's indifference. "That's a good thing," I told him. "It is? Why would being nervous be a good thing, Grandma?" He had such an innocent look to him. "It's healthy anxiety, and that's normal. People think of nerves as a bad thing, but that's not always the case. Those butterflies we sometimes feel in our stomach don't always mean something bad. It just means you're about to do something unfamiliar, and that feeling will help keep you on your toes. You're more aware." Nevada sat back and seemed to relax a little bit. I never thought of it that way. I remember the day my mom was bringing me to meet my father and my Duncan family. I was so nervous that I almost threw up. I didn't know what was going to happen. You had every right to be nervous. But I hope it was nerves and not fear, Nevada, I said. Since arriving, he had seemed to enjoy our family and fit right in. I had never seen any indication that he was uncomfortable among us. "No, Grandma, I'm a Duncan. I ain't scared of anything." He shook his head. It definitely wasn't fear. I couldn't help but laugh. He might not have been raised by his father in his younger years, but he definitely inherited his courage. "That's good. As soon as I walked in the house and saw you, I felt like I belonged." "You do belong, Nevada. And I'm so glad that you're living with us. You're right. You are a Duncan. And that is both powerful and special," I told him. "Which is why you're going to this Beautilian." "I guess. But Grandma, I already have manners. You say so all the time." "This isn't just about manners, Nevada. This is formal etiquette training. Being a part of Jack and Jill is about being a part of tradition. It's about culture and becoming exposed to the finer things in life. But being in this he stammered. "Beautilian? Beautilian?" he repeated. "Is this really necessary?" "Yes, Nevada. Trust me. You will enjoy it. This is a rite of passage that will introduce you to society as a man of dignity, strength, and grace." "Doesn't my being a Duncan tell society all of that?" "Yes, but participating in the Beautilian ball and learning how to waltz." "Waltz? Wait a minute, Grandma. You ain't saying nothing about me having to learn how to waltz." Nevada shook his head. "What did you think you'd be doing at the ball, Nevada? Crunk dancing?" Nevada laughed so hard that he snorted. "You mean crump dancing, Grandma?" "Crunk, crump, whatever you young people are calling it these days. You won't be doing that. You'll be waltzing. And I'll also give you the chance to spend time with some young ladies." "Oh, really?" A smile crept up on his face. He was definitely his father's son. "Who do you think you'll be learning to waltz with? You have to have a partner. And I know how much you enjoy the young ladies. I've seen you checking them out at church." He smiled. "Nah, Grandma. They were checking me out." I shook my head at him. "Of that, I'm sure. You're a very handsome young man. Now, are you ready to get measured for your tuxedo?" He groaned. "It's not like I have a choice." "Glad we understand each other," I said, looking out the window as we pulled up to the Miracle Mile Shopping Center in Manhasset. The trail car pulled up behind us. The driver opened the door, and Nevada climbed out, first then waited as I eased out of the SUV. "I'll be right in after I park, Mrs. Duncan," Rodney told me. "That's okay. Stay in the car. We won't be in here long. He's just being measured and then we'll be done. You don't have to come in if you don't want to." Rodney looked at the front entrance, then back at me with skepticism. "I don't know. Vegas said, "It's fine. Luis and Tito have already gotten out of the other car. It'll take all of 15 minutes," I assured him. "I'll call when we're ready, and you can pick us up right here. Besides, if anything happens, which I'm sure that it won't, Nevada can take care of me." Nevada beamed with pride as he put his arm around my shoulder. "Yeah, Rodney, I got her." Nevada and I set up toward the designer men's store, where Rio had made us an appointment with his personal tailor. Just as we were about to enter the store, I saw her walking toward us on the sidewalk, where she had stopped to look at one of the window displays. Had it been anyone else, I probably would have admired the couture pantsuit she wore, along with the exquisite diamond brooch, but there was nothing admirable about Donna. I had some choice words for her, and she needed to hear them. "Wait right here for a moment," I told Nevada, then made my way over to her. It was obvious by the way she jumped that I was the last person she expected to see. "Oh, Chippy. Hello." She acted like we were old friends who had just bumped into one another. "Don't hello me," I snarled. "I don't know why you keep forgetting this, so consider this a reminder or even a warning. Stay the fuck away from my family. I mean it. Elsie told me about your little meeting." "The meeting I had with Elsie was concerning my family, not yours." Her voice remained calm and pleasant, which caused the anger in me to rise even higher. "The only family you have is whoever the latest pitiful soul who is dumb enough to put a ring on your finger happens to be. This isn't about a man, Chippy. This is about my daughter. And unlike you and Elsie, who have no problem sending your children off on suicide missions all in the name of the Duncan family business, I want to make sure my daughter is safe and sound." "Daughter? You mean the same daughter who was raised by her father and you barely kept in contact with since she was 13 because you were too busy jet-setting around the world with random men? The same daughter who's lived at our house for the past 3 years? And you never once stopped by to see until your nosy ass heard my husband had been shot?" I snapped. "Or are you talking about the daughter who cried herself to sleep in my arms because her mother showed her up at a charity auction? Is that the daughter you're talking about? Because I'm more her mother than you are." I could see the anger in her eyes when they met mine. I had struck a nerve, which had been my intention. I was tired of everyone, including Elsie, acting like Donna had position in our family. She only had what I was willing to let her have, and nothing else. "You are not her mother. You will never be her mother. Do you understand me? That's my fucking daughter. She's all I got. You already stole one of my children, but I'll never let you have both, bitch," she said, seething with a barely suppressed rage now. "Stole?" I took a step toward her, lowering my voice. "If I recall, you abandoned him, and his father and I saved his life, and yours." I gave her a superior smirk. "Now, if you ever contact my husband and threaten him with your bullshit, I'll..." She cut me off, matching my expression with a haughty one of her own. Neither one of us was willing to back down. It had always been that way between us. "You'll what? Call my bluff? Keep it up and your little family secret won't be a secret anymore." Without thinking, I lunged and grabbed her by the collar, slapping her as hard as I could 3 times. Her eyes widened in surprise, and she gasped. The next thing I knew, her hand was in my hair, and she was yanking it. So I did the same. We both stumbled and fell against the window of the store we were in front of, and people began yelling. "Grandma! Grandma! Let her go!" Nevada grabbed me from behind and pulled me off her, while the rest of our security team grabbed Donna. "Grandma, calm down!" Once I was free, I stood up and readjusted my clothes. "You've lost your mind!" Donna yelled, as she struggled to get away from the grip of my security team. "Let me go, you creep! Are you okay, Grandma?" Nevada asked, still holding my arm. I nodded, out of breath, but happy I'd gotten in a few good shots. I'm fine. Come on. Let's go before we miss our appointment with the tailor. We started to walk away, but then I stopped and turned back to Donna to get in the last word. By the way, I will tell Junior myself before I let you destroy my family. How do you think he'll react when he finds out the woman who birthed him abandoned him at birth? Then again, him and Sasha will have a lot to talk about, won't they? It wasn't abandonment, and you know it! You are playing with a mother's love, Chippy! She screamed at me. You of all people should know that's a dangerous game. So stay away from Sasha, and I'll stay away from Junior. Call it what you want, Donna. But the bottom line is you are incapable of caring for a child, and you know that. If Elsie and I hadn't stepped in, who knows what could have happened to that baby. My men had let her go, but were hovering nearby in case she tried something again. So Donna shot them the middle finger, then picked up the bag she had dropped during our tussle, and walked away. Grandma, what was she talking about? About Uncle Junior? Nevada asked when she was gone. My poor baby looked so confused. I put my hands on either side of his face and stared him in the eyes. Nevada, remember I told you that being a Duncan means there are some things you may see and hear that are not to be talked about? Yes, he nodded. Well, what you saw happen, and more importantly, what you heard is something you will take to your grave. This is our little secret. Do you understand? I felt the tears forming in the corners of my eyes, but not one fell. I understand, he said and hugged me tight. We started walking toward the men's shop, Nevada keeping a protective arm around my shoulder. You know, Grandma, he said before we entered the store, I don't know if what just happened really fits in with that dignity and grace stuff you were just telling me about the butillion. I looked at him and saw a sly smile on his face. He sort of had a point, but I wasn't about to tell him that. I playfully swatted his hand away. Nice try, Nevada, but you are still going to the butillion, whether you like it or not. He gave me a kiss on the cheek and opened the door for me. After you, ma'am. God, I love that boy.
Elsie, 38. Chippy was in the den, drinking a glass of wine and listening to Al Green when we got home. She barely looked up when I walked in. I took off my jacket and loosened my tie, then poured myself a drink. I could hear my children mumbling in the living room, and I was sure they would make their way into the den soon. Hey, I sat on the sofa beside my wife and took a long swallow of bourbon.
Hey,
I could hear the irritation in her voice, and I wondered if one of the kids had called and given her an update about what had happened at the airfield. I waited for a few moments, expecting her to start fussing. But she didn't, which made me realize that something else was wrong. I moved a little closer and said, "Okay, Chippy, what's wrong? You got the old school music playing and you ain't saying much." When she turned to me, I saw a red mark on her cheek and scratches on her neck. I sat up and leaned in to get a closer look at her injuries. What the hell happened to you?
I'm fine, Elsie. Calm down. I just ran into someone who never fails to bring out the old me.
She sighed loudly and took a sip of wine. Let me guess. You ran into Donna.
I did. And what the hell happened to you? You walked in and went straight for the top-shelf bottle,
she said, gesturing to my glass filled almost to the brim with bourbon. Well, while you were slugging it out with Donna, I was out looking for Larry and the boys, I told her.
I take it you didn't find them.
I swallowed the rest of my drink and was about to explain what happened when Vegas walked in with the rest of his siblings behind him.
Hey, Mom,
Vegas said.
Hey, Vegas, Junior, Orlando.
Chippy frowned.
Rio, what are you doing here? Why aren't you in Jamaica?
I followed Uncle Larry back here.
Followed him from where?
Rio looked over at me and I nodded, letting him know it was okay to give her the details. Sometimes I like to leave out a few things if I knew they would upset her too much. Anything that put her kids in extreme danger was usually on that list.
Uncle Larry was in Jamaica,
Rio told her.
What the hell was Larry in Jamaica for?
She put down her wine and stood up.
He was meeting with Vinnie Dash, and when...
This isn't making any sense. Where the hell is London?
Chippy demanded to know.
She's in Kingston,
Vegas said in an attempt to calm his mother down and save Rio from her wrath at the same time.
But Daryl is with her.
Chippy, London is fine. She and Daryl are keeping an eye out on Vinny while Rio was instructed not to let Larry out of his sight, I explained.
Well, you said you couldn't find Larry, Elsie. I'm so confused with all of this.
Chippy folded her arms. Vegas's phone rang, and he stepped out to take the call. I pulled her down to sit beside me and explained what had taken place over the past few hours.
Well, what are we going to do, Elsie?
Chippy asked me when I was finished. I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? We need a plan.
A worried look on her face mirrored exactly how I was feeling. I mean I don't know. There is no plan at this point, I told her. The room became silent.
Pop, things just got a little dicey,
Vegas said when he came back. Now what? I sighed.
I just heard from our Dominican friends. They just re-upped with Uncle Larry. He sold them 5 kilos for $30,000 apiece, he said.
How? That's damn near what we pay,
Junior said. Damn it. He knows what he's doing. He's undercutting our price, I said, starting to get a clearer picture of what Larry was up to.
Yeah, but at those prices, none of us will make any money,
Orlando said. I think that's the point, son, I explained. Larry doesn't care about making money. All he wants to do is hurt us.
Well, is the product any good?
Orlando asked. Vegas delivered bad news.
According to my people, it's just as pure as ours. Maybe a little purer.
Where the hell did Uncle Larry get that kind of dope from?
Junior shook his head in amazement. He got it from Vinnie Dash, I said, matter-of-factly as I stood up. Vegas?
Yeah, Pop.
I want to know where the fuck Vinnie Dash got his product from, and I want to know how much of it he has. Vegas nodded, a grimace on his face.
So do I, Pop.
So do I.
Ruby, 39. Once again, I had woken up from a dream about Orlando that was so real I could still feel his lips and hands on my body. It was bad enough that I saw him every time I looked in Vincent's face, but now he was haunting my dreams on a daily basis. I decided that what I needed was some retail therapy. Shopping was the ultimate stress reliever, and I hadn't been shopping in a while. So I called Vinny and told him that Vincent and I were going out for the afternoon. "Where you going?" he asked. "I'm just going to pick up a few things from downtown, Vinny. Maybe a dress and some underwear for you and Vincent. I won't be gone long, I promise," I told him. "You can't go by yourself," Vinny stated, sounding more like my father than my husband. "Take Henry and Charles with you." I was glad he couldn't see the disgusted expression on my face. Henry and Charles were two of the men that spent more time smoking weed and harassing the women that walked by the house than protecting Vincent and me, and I couldn't stand them, especially Charles, who was always ogling me. There was no way I was going anywhere with them. I don't know where they are. Besides, I already asked Blake to take us, I told him, hoping that Blake, one of the few men who was still around from when my brother was in charge, was nearby. Okay, that's fine. Blake knows what to do. Oh, and boxes, not briefs, Ruby. I know, Vinny. I'm not the one who buys briefs, you are. That's right, isn't it? Okay, then. I'll see you later. Be careful. I love you. Love you, too, I told him, relieved that he hadn't put up much of a fight. Half an hour later, we were climbing into the back of Blake's Jeep. Are we going to buy toys? Vincent asked me. Maybe, I told him as I fastened his seatbelt. Vincent, my man, how you been? Blake greeted my son with a big grin. Hey, Blake, Vincent smiled back. We're going to buy toys. I know, Blake nodded. I said maybe, I corrected them. And only if you're a good boy. He's always a good boy, Blake said as the Jeep pulled forward. Blake had been around, it seemed like, forever. He was one of the last links between my brother's regime and Vinny's so-called new Jamaican posse. He was a laid-back, friendly guy who I always felt comfortable around. Where many of Vinny's employees gawked and stared at my body, even some going so far as to make lewd comments that they thought I didn't hear, Blake was always respectful and pleasant, and on more than one occasion, I had overheard him putting people in their place. Vincent also liked him a lot. I was glad, when we moved from the States back to Jamaica, that Blake was one of the guys who made the move with us. "Blake, you can pull over there," I said. We were at a stoplight almost at the edge of town. It was a rough area, and I knew it wasn't the safest part of town, but there was a small boutique on the corner with a beautiful dress hanging in the window. "This is not a good place to shop," he said, giving me a warning look in the rearview mirror. "I just want to see how much the dress is, Blake. It's fine," I assured him. He pulled the Jeep over and parked right in front of the store. "I'll be right back. You wait right here for Mummy," I told Vincent. "But what about my toy?" Vincent asked. His voice quivered, and I could see he was about to throw a fit, which was exactly what I didn't want to happen. "There ain't no toys in that store, son. There ain't nothing in there but fancy lady things. You don't want to go in there, I promise," Blake told him. Vincent didn't look like he believed him. "If you stay here and be good, we'll go and get you a toy when we leave," I said, which was enough to make him sit back in his seat and calm down a little. "Okay," he said quietly. I quickly walked into the store. There were several racks filled with gorgeous items, but I knew I only had so much time before Vincent would be asking for me. I looked around for a salesperson but didn't see anyone. "Hello," I called out. "I'll be right out," a woman yelled from the back. And a few moments later she appeared. "How are you? How can I help you?" She sounded friendly. "Hello, I wanted to know about the dress in the window, the green one," I said. "Oh yes, that's one of my favorite dresses. I can help you in 1 minute. I have someone in the dressing room and I'll be right back to get one for you," she said. "Okay, maybe I should come back. My son is in the car." "No, no, I'll be right back," she sang as she rushed off. I began admiring a few of the dresses on the racks and listened as she assisted another customer. "Are you sure this looks okay?" I heard another woman ask. "It looks beautiful. It's the perfect dress for the occasion," the saleswoman told her. "Your brother would be proud." "I can't believe I'm picking out a dress for his funeral," the other woman sniffed, and I could hear that she was crying. My heart sank,
because I knew exactly how she felt. I recalled having to do the same thing.
Ya will be fine, child. We are all sad that Leviticus is gone. He was a good man.
At the sound of the name Leviticus, I felt my stomach tighten. It was the same name as one of Randy's childhood friends. I waited anxiously so that I could confirm if it was the same man. The saleswoman returned, this time with her arm around the customer she had been helping, and it confirmed what I had feared. They were talking about Randy's friend.
Mary?
I said, my eyes filling with tears. She was Leviticus's sister, and like our brothers, we'd gone to school together.
Oh, my God! Did I hear right? Leviticus is dead? I'm so sorry.
Mary looked over at me, holding the black dress. Her face went from one filled with sadness to one full of anger.
Yes, he's dead. But me no need no pity from you or your crocodile tears.
What? What do you mean? I was confused by her reaction.
Don't play games. It was your man that killed him, she spat at me.
Oh, Jesus!
The saleswoman grabbed the crucifix hanging around her neck, kissed it, and made the sign of the cross.
That's not true. My husband would do no such thing. You are mistaken.
I know you, and I know your husband, the white man. He killed Leviticus the same way he killed your brother, Randy. Everyone knows this. Randy was a good man the same as Leviticus. They were friends from grade school. You marry a white man who kills our people, and now you won't say you sorry? You go to hell with your sorry, because we no want it.
She yelled, tears streaming down her face. I recognized her pain.
My brother was killed by someone else, not my husband, and he didn't kill your brother either. You don't know what you're talking about.
I shook my head at her, telling myself that it was the grief over her brother's death that was causing her to say these horrible things about Vinny.
No, you don't know. Everyone knows. Everyone except you.
She turned to the saleswoman.
You know who killed Big Randy over in the U.S., don't you?
The saleswoman looked at her, then me, and said,
They say it was his partner, a white man who killed him.
Not wanting to hear anything else, I ran out of the store and snatched the door of the Jeep open so hard that it surprised both Vincent and Blake.
What's wrong, Mama?
Vincent asked.
Drive,
I said. Blake put the Jeep in gear, and we drove for about 5 minutes before I said in a whisper,
Did Vinny kill Leviticus?
Blake's eyes widened, and he looked away.
Answer me, Blake. You're one of the only people in the world that I truly trust. I need you to tell me, please,
I begged him. Blake nodded his head slowly.
Yes, Vinny killed him.
My eyes welled up with tears.
And Randy? Did he kill my brother Randy?
The truth is, I don't know, ma'am,
he finally said.
Well then, I need you to find out. And Blake, this is between you and me. I don't want anyone knowing about it.
I glared over at him until he relented and gave me a slight nod.
Vegas, 40. I sat in Pelham Park and watched for almost an hour as one man after another sat at the rusty card table and lost their money, playing heads-up dominoes with the overweight champion. He was lively and loud as he conquered them one by one. As the sun began to set, I stood and made my way over and sat in the empty chair across from him, placing 5 crisp $100 bills in the center of the table. Shuffle 'em up, I said. $500. You sure you wanna lose this, man? He laughed, spreading the black pieces across the table. I ain't worried, I told him, and I began selecting my bones. is Yala's, not mine, he shrugged, placing a stack of bills next to mine. Once the game began, he barely looked up from the table. Each move I made was strategic and calculated. Studying him in that short amount of time had given me a preview of his skills. I'd had one of the best domino educations in the world. Jail. Just as he had during the previous games I'd watched him play. He was talking shit in the beginning, but as the game moved on, he became quiet, and his boastful rants disappeared. A crowd gathered around us to get a closer look. I could sense his frustration, and it made my victory even sweeter when I simply said the word, domino. It was at that moment that he decided to look up to see exactly who had broken his winning streak. I slid back my hood, and he boldly removed my sunglasses. He recognized me immediately, and his eyes widened in terror. Jamaica John. I smiled at him. Fucking Duncan, he hissed. He tried to slide his chair back and reach into his pocket, but his belly was so big that it got caught on the edge of the table, shaking it and almost causing it to flip over. He stumbled back down into his seat, looking around. Looking for your men? My guys took them for a ride. You'll find them over by Yankee Stadium, Orlando said as he reached around him from behind and took out his gun. What the fuck you want, Vegas? He looked scared, but tried to hide it. I wouldn't take that tone with me, John. I'm really not in the mood. Now I need some information, and you're going to give it to me. I no got no information for ya. Sorry, he said. Orlando kicked the leg of his chair, causing him to fall to the ground. I got up and stood over him. Get your fat ass up. Jamaica John struggled, and I looked over at my brother, who was trying not to laugh. I almost felt bad for him as he used the folding chair to lean on as he pushed his large body off the ground. Where is... I don't know nothing, John insisted before I could even get the name out. I haven't even told you what I want. Whatever it is, I don't know shit. Oh, you know, I sighed. Now tell me, where the fuck is my uncle? A strange look came across his face. Your uncle? Yeah. You thought I was gonna ask about your fucking boss, Vinny Dash? I know he's in Tivoli Gardens, so I ain't thinking about his ass right now, John. Right now I'm more concerned with the whereabouts of my Uncle Larry. Why would I know where he is? John asked. Because I know he's been working with Vinny. And I know that you're the one who's been helping him. Once again, John's eyes grew wide. No, I ain't. Listen before you lie to me again. I need you to know that we talked with your nephew, Gus. He's pretty much filled us in on everything. That is a lie. My nephew is no snitch. John glared at me. Really? Well, he told the feds all about how you set up the meeting with Vinny and Larry and arranged for him to fly Larry and his sons over to Jamaica and back with a whole bunch of dope. Now, we can do this one of two ways. One, I can haul your fat ass over to the feds, or two, I'm sure you know all about the bounty on my uncle's head right now. John looked even more confused. What are you saying? Man, I told you to just offer that reward to Gus. We're wasting our time with this dude, Orlando yelled. I raised my hand and played my part in our good cop, bad cop exchange. Hold on a minute, O. Let the man at least answer us. Looking at Jamaica John, I asked, what's it gonna be? Look, Vegas. I don't know where your uncle's at. That's the truth, man. The number I had for him is not working no more. John shrugged. But I swear I could see him trembling beneath all that fat. But he will call you eventually. I pulled out a chair and sat directly in front of him. Looked him in the eye and said, fine. You don't know where my uncle is? But you do know how the hell Vinny got all that dope you sold him. Let's talk about that.
London, 41. We had been staked out at a small outdoor cafe for almost 2 hours. I was on my third cappuccino, and Daryl was on his fourth cup of tea. The cafe was located directly across the street from the building where Uncle Larry and Vinny had met up. Daryl had decided that returning to the forbidden neighborhood Vinny disappeared into would be like looking for a needle in a haystack. The only other lead we had was to return to the downtown building in hopes that we would see him again. Now that our team had made their way from the grill to Kingston, we set up around-the-clock surveillance of the building. As luck would have it, just as our shift started, Daryl and I spotted the same yellow Lamborghini that Vinny had been driving, parked in the building's lot. Instead of going inside in search of him, we sat at the coffee shop and waited for him to come out. "I'm not gonna lie, I forgot how good we were together," I said to Daryl. My body was still feeling the effects of round two this morning. "Yeah, we've always had crazy chemistry. I think we both know that." He reached across the table and covered my hand with his. "Look, I ain't trying to mess this up right now because we're both enjoying it, but you do know that eventually we have to go home." I nodded sadly. "I don't want to think about that." "Neither do I, but..." I touched my finger to his lips.
"Shh. You said you didn't want to mess it up."
His emotion-filled eyes met mine.
"This is a very dangerous game we're playing."
His words sank in, and that warm, satisfying sense of contentment that I'd felt since waking up in his arms began to fade. My eyes darted from his face back to the building in an effort to avoid his stare. "Oh, wow, Daryl. Vinny's walking out the door. We gotta go." I stood up and placed some money on the table. We quickly made our way back to the rental car as inconspicuously as possible. Vinny pulled out of the parking lot, followed by another dark-tinted SUV, and we eased behind them. Daryl continued to maintain a loose tail.
"He's headed back to Tivoli Gardens," Daryl said.
"I don't care if he's headed to the moon, just don't lose him." We had just crossed over into the neighborhood when a large box truck suddenly reversed from an alley and stopped in the middle of the road, preventing us from going any farther.
"What the fuck is he doing?" I said, unable to see around it. "Blow the horn."
"Get the fuck out of the way,"
Daryl yelled as he leaned on the horn. A loud rapping on the driver's side window startled both of us. Daryl lowered the window slightly so that he could hear the tall, scary-looking guy with the shoulder-length dreadlocks hovering next to the car. I couldn't help but notice the long machete bat he was swinging back and forth in his hand.
"Are you lost, man?"
he asked. That's when I noticed three other machete-wielding men on my side of the car.
"Nah, man, we're not lost. We're tourists, and we just happened to make a wrong turn," Daryl told him.
I touched Daryl's arm as a small group of six or seven men came and stood beside the one holding the bat. Now there were a total of 10 men surrounding the car.
"That mean you lost. Let me help you, man. The way out is that way, and that's the only way you should be hidden. You understand?"
He pointed the machete in the same direction we had come from.
"That way. Got it,"
Daryl said, putting the car in reverse and turning around.
"We're leaving?"
I asked him.
"Yep.
Are we gonna come back later tonight?"
"Not unless we have a death wish. This is not a place where we want to get caught after dark."
LC, 42. I stepped out of the back of the SUV, along with Orlando, Jr., and Harris. We were then followed into a sleek Canal Street office building by my four bodyguards. LC Duncan to see Jun Ching. He should be expecting me, I told the young woman sitting at the reception desk.
"One moment, Mr. Duncan. You may have a seat over there if you'd like."
She pointed to the waiting area. "I'll stand and wait here." She picked up the phone and announced to whoever was on the other end, then said,
"You can follow me this way."
I ordered the bodyguards to sit tight as the rest of us